Welcome to Dr. Fred Bell's Health Science and Energy Show. This is the August 15th already. My goodness, halfway through August almost. Luckily, it's a 31-day. We are at the Alien event in Los Angeles today, having a great time with a lot of speakers. It's being hosted by Laura Eisenhower, who is Dwight Eisenhower's granddaughter, and some Japanese lady princess is there. I don't know who she is, but I guess she's part of the royal family of Japan. And I got a lot of crazy, wild speakers, including some of the BBS own hosts. So anyhow, without any ado, let's just continue on where we left off last week.
I said, well, why are you leaving? You know, she explained not only as her group leaving, but overall, the main Pleiadian influence has to leave this world now, and the Andromedans have to come. And I knew that the Andromedans, I'd read about them in Paul Hernandez, who was Potrero's right-hand man in Mexico. And I had an interface with Potrero several years ago when he was the king of Mexico, or the governor, the president of Mexico. I'd had a direct interface with him, so I could relate to John Hernandez, his number one nuclear scientist, being abducted by an Andromedan group. They physically took him away in a ship after he spent several years with one of the other Andromedan people. So I had a feel for what they were about. And I know that I've seen in Wendell Stevens' book, if you take a picture of one of them, that you just get a, looks like a cocoon of light. You don't see the physical features, even though they are human. So I knew a little bit about them. And so when the Ara came, I was kind of getting ready for them. You know, it was like a new experience. And Sannyasi explained that the Andromedans were not, they live 5,000 years, and they don't reproduce like the Pleiadians. They produce in a tantric way, and they rematerialize in about 2 minutes. In other words, they get to be 5,000 years old, and they completely collapse their energy, and they take up another form again immediately in 5 minutes if they want to. So their societies and their way lifestyles, they do fly around in physical ships. We were up at Santa Cruz. We were able to see one night, and Franca, my wife, saw it in a very close range, and it was pointed out that the ship was coming, and she got to see it. They do have ships, but they are, because they're a 5,000-year-old being, they have a little bit more of a handle on natural law. They're considered the highway patrol of the universe. For example, in the Pleiadian ship, if it's programmed, the way that the transport system works in a Pleiadian ship for hyperleaps is that they take a photograph. Basically, you can imagine they take a three-dimensional photograph of the area around the ship. And they photograph the top, they photograph the bottom, and they have this picture of where they are. This is when they get outside the Earth. You know, they don't do it right on the ground here. Then they have in their computer another photograph of where they want to be. And what they do is dump the computer down. I can show you, I built one of their engines once. I've got it in my slides here. But they cancel, they have this chamber that where the pictures, there's a little optic system on the top and the bottom of the ship, and that big beam ship, if you see the lights coming up with the big one, the big thing on the top, that's a more complicated optic system, but it basically feeds in this information. So they have a picture of where they want to be, and they have a picture of where they are, and they switch the picture information, they reproject outside of the ship to the area they want to be, and then they end up there. That's how they get there, okay? And it's a science that they developed because their worlds are, their suns are within a light year of one another. Over at, she comes from a sun called Tagata, which is only a light year from another sun. On Era, you see two suns. You see one bright sun and one small sun. It's really pretty. And the hydrogen atom is the same as it is here, except they got flowers that, you know how our sunflowers open and close? They have flowers that turn and face the two suns and change color during the day. I mean, their horticulture is beyond anything I could describe here. This place looks like a weed dump, I mean, next to where they come from. And their planet is green from space and ours is blue because they don't have as much ocean as we do. And that's a whole other story, how come we got so much ocean, which was created by a catastrophe. But anyway, so there's a difference in their propulsion. So in order to go from point A to point B, they have to map, they have to take little individual pictures to form a photo map from point A to point B. You don't just conjure up a picture. You have to make a photo map. So first they made a photo map using a normal ion propulsion system, no speed of light overdrive stuff, and they took pictures of their whole neighborhood over there. And then they started to assemble these pictures. And then they started to do theoretical picture taking to make bigger and bigger leaps. And that's how they started leaping around. Okay? A lot of times when they get so far out in their explorations, they conjure up a picture of what they think because they've seen it from different angles of where they want to go, but the picture isn't quite right, and that's how they die. Okay? That's a Pleiadian death. Boom. They dematerialize forever. They're gone. They're history. And eventually they'll come back. Their aura frequency will come back. But who knows when? That's when they get lost. They don't even know when they come back into their society, and their computers can't find them anywhere. That's why I built the time machine, because Somayati told me you better get lost in time before you get lost in space. If you get lost in time and space simultaneously, you'll never find your way back. And that's some of the big picture. So where the Andromedans come in as the highway patrol is that if you have two ships coming from Pleiades to here and they're going to be beaming in at the same time, they don't need to materialize in the same space. That would cause like the equivalent of a nuclear bomb going off with all that energy. So the Andromedans map out energy highways, or I call them electric highways, and keep all the synchronicity of all the ship travel in these sectors from banging and having crashes in each other and stuff. Okay. Now the Greys, they don't really pay much attention. They're a little bunch of pesky little assholes, you know, like they're running around the universe without driver's licenses half the time. And so they're constantly having crashes like they do up here in New Mexico. They're getting bumped into, they're getting destroyed. The Pleiadian, if a Grey gets in front of a Pleiadian, they'll blow them right out of the sky if they have to, you know. They give them a warning. But Andromedans, there's photographs taken by NASA, I've seen some of them, of ships firing on each other in space, taken from the Apollo missions. Oh, yeah. Actual dogfights. That's something going on here. And so the Andromedans regulate all this, you know. Andromedans travel in motherships. They travel in huge ships when they move around. We're talking major-sized ships. First time I ever saw at the Andromedans, Pleiadians don't like to be seen by people. Because when they're seen by people, then they're recognized when they're on the streets or something. Because they'll come down here for 2 or 3 hours sometimes, and they don't want to be recognized or captured. The government has already captured a bunch of them and put them in deep freeze at Wright-Patterson. And when you freeze a Pleiadian in cryogenics, it's a slow death for them because they spend more time on the astral plane than they do the physical when they're crossing space. And so, you know, like if a human dies, you want to cremate them immediately so they're free of their bodies. The Pleiadian gets frozen, he's stuck to that body for a long time. And so when the Pleiadians come over Wright-Patterson, a lot of times they have astral contact with some of their brothers that have been captured. And the ships are over here at Area 51, but the bodies are over in Wright-Patterson. There's 15 of them that I know of. So one of these days those bodies have to be destroyed, and the Andromedans will come in and do that. Pleiadians are still a friendly enough race where they won't rush in to Wright-Patterson and rescue and destroy the bodies. Obviously, they've been frozen, they have to be destroyed, now, but that frees them, but they will not do that. They're that friendly, that peaceful. But these are some of the kinds of things that go on. So anyhow, the Pleiadians like to keep out of the way of things. And the reason they got captured is because the Greys, when they armed some of our missiles were armed with antimatter generators, which he was talking about, and fired on from military jets at the Pleiadian ships, and they brought them down. And the ones that are here that run on the element 115 are not capable of any form of interstellar flight, because when the ships were brought down, they have signatures in them. You know how you have a key in your car to start it? Well, they have signatures that are only part of the pattern of the pilot. And so anything happens to the pilot, these signatures destroy themselves. They blow up. The switches break. And so certain parts of the ship have been destroyed. They can hover those things. If you ever listen to Lazara, all you ever saw was those, what they call sport models, is they're hovering over Area 51. They never fly them. because they're not capable of any kind of flight. They can hover, and that's about it. So anyway, I forget the date, but it was in 1989 when I had my first contact with Liara. And she basically, it happened on a Friday afternoon in October or November. I have a date written down in my notes at home. And when she came, I was up there, you know that park? Maybe you noticed the park with the tennis court. Well, that park was built back, it was commissioned back in 1987, that park when it was completed. They're still adding to it. So I was up there jogging. I start my jogging at the park, and I go out through the hills when I run. So I was just getting ready to start my jogging up there on that hill, and this voice, well, it was very much like a sannyasi voice. The first contact was very similar to Pleiadian, except I didn't feel any sexual energy, but I definitely heard the voice. And it says, "Hello, I'm Liara. I'm the new person here, you know." And I said, "Well, that's great." You gotta understand that I'm a triple Leo. I'm a little bit emotional sometimes, you know. And I just lost my girlfriend of 20 years, and so I really wasn't looking forward to the Andromeda. I could really, you know, care less about the Andromeda. I was really happy with the Pleiadians. My point of view, I was an idiot anyway around them. Well, all I know, I knew nothing. And why turn me over to some higher race when I don't even understand the race that I'm dealing with? But those karmic reasons, they had to. So she says, "I'm Liara." And I said, well, to myself, great, you know, this is wonderful. Where the hell are you? I don't see anything, you know. And she says, you know, just like ignores what I'm thinking, because I know they can read your thoughts instantly when you let them. And if you're talking to them mentally and communicating telepathically, they're definitely, that's how you do it. But you're also reading their thoughts too a little bit. So it's a two-way exchange. So she says that she's going to be here, and she starts telling me she's going to be teaching me politics, you know, and I'm going to be learning all kinds of stuff. And I says, "Where are you?" And she says, "Well, we're right here." And then I come off with a real smart comment like, "Well, I suppose you're like the Pleiadians. You're invisible half the time. I'm the only one that can see you. Most, and that's rare, and most of it's all going to be mental stuff again, right?" She says, "Quite to the contrary." And I looked her eyes and said, "Well, what do you mean?" She says, "We'll become visible anytime we want in front of anybody. We're not shy. We're not bashful. And we don't basically care who sees us or when they see us or where they see us. On the street, in the air, it doesn't matter." So I thought, this is kind of interesting, you know. These people aren't bashful, you know. And she says, "Would you like to see us right now?" And I looked around, and these people were jogging. It's late afternoon, it's Friday. There's about 30 or 40, 50 people up there in that park. And it's the end of the summer. It's usually pretty busy. People are playing tennis. And I said, "Sure, I don't mind. You know, I'd like to see you right now." She says, "Look over here." So she had me look over that way in the kind of like the northeast direction. I looked up there. I don't see anything, you know. And she says, "Keep looking." I says, "All right." I said, "All of a sudden in the sky, if you imagine if you're on that hill, you know, here's the hill up here, you know, like this, and here's the tennis court over here, you know, to give you a side of the perspective, you know. This is the entire park. This is probably the entire hill from here to here. Falls off the canyon, goes down into the grounds over there." So I looked up at the sky. This would be my house back over here, and the ocean is like, you can see it all the way around up here. So I look up in the sky, and you know, I see this big square, okay, up here. And I say, this square, big square, like a neon, the best way I can describe it, a neon light shaped like a square, appears in the sky. It's about 600 feet across, about 2 foot football fields across. Big square. You know, well, this is real exciting. I'm tremendously cynical. I don't know why I'm being this way at this time, but this is where my head was at on that day. I was still sulking over the Pleiades. Then I see another square. Then I see another square. Then I see another square. Then I see another one here. And another one here. And another one here. And here. And like this. Each one the size of one or two football fields, and then another one, and then another one. And there was 16, I guess, if I remember correctly. And all these squares, now we've taken up a third of the sky with some squares. Then they started to get brighter. Then I see the light radiating off it, and I start to see a silhouette of this ship. It's a cigar shape. and I'm seeing about a third of the silhouette of a ship. And these are getting brighter, and as they get brighter, it's starting to reflect. It's still, you can see blue sky through it. Some highly sophisticated technology is obviously going on here. And this huge cigar is starting to appear. And then, this is a third, then another set of squares, both starts to come on, and another set of squares. And basically, we have enough square. We got four sets of these squares, and the whole sky is full of these squares, and this full fuselage is starting to become very apparent. And this thing is a mile or two across. This is the arc. Very first contact. And I'm looking at this thing, and whoa, you know. But I said, I'm looking at it. Now she's got my attention. I am definitely one interested human here, you know. And then I catch myself, you know. Because I've had some bizarre contacts. That's Propagella. She had a gray flight that are straight at our truck at 400 feet away. I almost crashed into my pickup truck with two other witnesses in Dolphin. I mean, we're talking some major action they've had. So then I'm looking at this huge thing up in the sky, which is about like that. You know, over at the end of the park. And I said, well, I suppose I'm the only one that can see this, you know, meaning that the Pleiadians would do some of this stuff, but except one time in 81, I was allowed to take a group out for a demonstration of flight with a whole group. I figure I'm the only one seeing it. And she says, why don't you look around instead of looking at us? So I start looking around. People aren't playing tennis anymore. People aren't jogging anymore. The whole park is staring at this giant object in the sky, going nuclear, and then starts to fade out. Blink, 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 blink. And it fades out. And she says, you get the picture. You got my attention now. She's very matronly. Now, Liara is a very matronly person, you know. She's like talking to a middle-aged... she reminds me of that prosecutor, Marcia Garcetti, in the O.J. Simpson case. She even looks a little bit like her. You know, maybe she's an Andromeda, the head prosecutor, that woman you've probably seen on TV. You've seen her demeanor. Liara is like that. She's there, small amount of humor, straight ahead, no bullshit. That's Liara, you know. So Gaffer is a little different, you know. Billy and I both tried to get onto her physically, and both of us got shot down pretty quick. I had one conflict experience with her, and that was about it, and I was single at the time, so I figured it was okay. We never had anything like that again. But Liara, you wouldn't even think about sexual approach on this woman. I don't think they have sex. They have this other thing that's much more intense. But they are great teachers. They teach us an awful lot. And that's the only time I've seen that ship, but I've seen several times since then other different smaller ships. I'm going to take about a 5-minute break here. I got to go get this piece of dirt out of my eye, you know. Pyramids. When you look directly at a pyramid, you have seven levels of consciousness. We talked about yesterday in meditation, and the bottom of it manifests physically in this part here, and the top part, which is the first ray, manifests here. And this, of course, is the iron atoms in your body, the carbon atoms in your body. All this manifests consciousness. The first thing is the hydrogen atom. The hydrogen atom is the first atom to connect with carbon, and then oxygen and nitrogen follow. And so we've talked about the energy and how all that stuff works. When you have the pyramid upside down near a gravitational body, like a gravitational body, the polarity is shifts on it, becomes 180 degrees out of phase, and that's why the female energy works. We've discussed all that. You can see that in the picture there. It's a drawing of how they look. Wearing them on the head, a couple of things happen that's really important to understand. When you look at the arterial side, when you breathe oxygen in, about living in a flat now, this time of day, the air is flat out there, you know, yeah. I mean, it's living on the hill. When you breathe air in, the air goes immediately to the lungs. When it gets down in the lungs, it goes directly into the left atrium of the heart, out through the aorta valve, through the trachea, up to the brain. The size of the arteries from the lungs to the brain are very large, up to a quarter of an inch in diameter. As soon as you get to the brain, you realize this is the flow of oxygen, life force into your body. As soon as you get to the brain, the arterial size of the brain is reduced down to a millionth of an inch. See? So what happens is the brain becomes a strainer and it starts straining. So over a period of a lifetime, all the shit that's in the air in your blood ends up in your brain and shuts down your brain. First part of your brain to go is your cerebellum. It means you can't stand on one foot, you can't touch the ground, come back up, walk around backwards. Things that I can still do, what I did when I was a kid when I played hockey. Most people can't do that, okay? Because the cerebellum is damaged. Then this goes into the midbrain, and then goes into the forebrain. When it hits the forebrain, it shuts down the third eye, the pineal gland, and the body gets ready to exit the form. The consciousness exits the form. It's the aging process, again, on another level. Realize that every single red blood cell of your body has a perfect DNA imprint of your brain on it, okay? Meaning that if you were to look at somebody's blood, they haven't done this on this planet, but they're starting to. This is DNA imprinting, okay? What you'll see in the O.J. Simpson case, it'll come to the public. But what that's about is you're looking through a microscope at the person, in a person's brain, every red blood cell, every single red blood cell. If you pick up this book and read a little bit of information out of here, and this registers as thought and registers as growth expansion, inside your brain, a little area has had a little drill has gone in there, has drilled a little hole because it's memory. It's deposited a little bit of iron there from your blood, and it's made a little cavity. So every time you learn, your brain etches in a new imprint physically in the gray matter. Okay? Whenever that happens, every single red blood cell in your body changes exactly to match the imprint of your brain. DNA matching, okay? When you get in touch with that holographically, you come into the power of the Andromedans, and you realize what he was talking about, when you're sick, the universe is sick, when the universe is well, you're well, okay? So you get, that takes you into the power, but it takes a 5,000-year-old being to really master it. Humans aren't capable of mastering it because they have logic. There is no logic in Andromedan thought. It doesn't exist. There's nothing linear at all about these people. So it's a waste of time. When you wear the pyramid on your head, yeah, exactly. You're talking about mental. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, everybody can. But we were trained not to. You know, you cut a tail off a lizard and it grows back. Nobody told you could grow a tail back. Chop a man's arm off, he can still feel where the arm was. But it doesn't grow back because some idiot somewhere back in the DNA told man if he lost his arm, he couldn't have a new one. Right. You know, brain cells. I've taught my brain cells. I can reproduce my brain cells. They try to tell you that you destroy your brain cells? Bullshit. I put more poison in my brain, more alcohol, more drugs than 10 people. I've done 10 people on every level of poisons. And my brain is better than most because I made my brain hell whole again. I wouldn't accept this bullshit damage. I remember damaging myself. I remember being screwed up. I remember short-term memory loss, but that all went away when it was supposed to. Oh, yeah, yeah. Chew it up. Nothing. Yeah. It gives rid of headaches. Acid gets rid of headaches. I mean, I take acid now, nothing happens. I used to take 50 or 100 hits when I was really into it, trying to get that final.
You just have a lot of money.
Yeah. Yeah, great for headaches. But I mean, the average person is full of bullshit. That's all they see is bullshit. They go on a bullshit trip, you know? But anyway. Yeah. So anyhow, when you put the pyramid on your head, what it does is it starts vibrating your head and cleans all that stuff, that accumulation, that residue, and so your brain starts to function again, okay? The stronger the pyramid, the quicker it cleans your brain out. The power one, what I've done, the silver one, works the best, okay? A lot of times you're going to get a headache when you put a silver power dome on. That's because all the stuff is going back into your blood, going down to your liver. When it gets down to your liver, it's called the friendly headache syndrome. Okay? Very important to wear a pyramid as much as possible. The nuclear receptor does not do that. It doesn't even phase the brain. The receptor works on the DNA it works on the integrity of the life force. And each one of these things is life extension. Each one of these things is another area of the body to study. We put these on a class up in the University of California at Santa Barbara. And you know, the problem with colleges, and I've been to enough of them, is that the material is for a consciousness of a caveman. So that these progressive students that are up there don't want this material. So everybody does drugs and spaces out in school. And then, of course, they jack the price up to try to force people out. If they're doing raising the university rates completely out of sight, there's a whole collegiate system in the world sucks. I mean, that's the best way I could describe it. So we took a class at Santa Barbara and put pyramids on their heads and made them wear it for a whole semester. We raised the grade point of the class 1 point. We went from a B minus class to a B. I think we went to a B or a B plus. The whole grade point went up. When we were doing this, I used to work in universities all over the country with pyramids, and so we performed millions of tests. Amherst College offered me a very large grant, but I told them when I was back there lecturing there, teaching their professors, because I usually educate professors and PhDs, I told them the only reason I wouldn't go to Amherst is I quit when I lived in Ann Arbor. I shoveled too much snow. And Buckminster Fuller was the guy that offered the grant. It was a real honor to have Bucky Fuller, before he died, offered me a grant at his school, because that was his school. It was a pre-med school for MIT and Harvard. But anyhow, at the University of California, when I was working with them, we had a school system at San Luis Obispo, a school system up there, and we had a teacher in there using them in his class. We had the Wilton School up in L.A. using them for kids on Ritalin and stuff, you know, because they get hyperactive. So we used to use this. So anyhow, I get this call at 3 o'clock. We're 2 o'clock in the morning from Sky Lewis, a teacher up at this Orchid Union School, San Luis Obispo, called Orchid Union School. He calls me up and says, "We've had a miracle happen here in the class." And I says, "What do you mean?" He says, "A little kid by the name of Stan Holmes, who's 9 years old. He's had a grand mal seizure since birth, and he's been wearing a pyramid. And we weren't sure what was happening, but after he's been wearing it a month now, for the last 2 weeks, the kid hasn't had a seizure. We know it's a pyramid." And the kid even was dyslexic, and now he could write. He started writing normally, and he wrote me a testimonial, which is in my book, Death of Ignorance. So this is great for grand mal seizures, because it's electrical precursoring energy, directs electricity, then that, in this case, caused his lithium therapy that they were having on to start working. He started metabolizing his minerals, because it started the electrolyte action, which causes metabolism and electrolysis in the brain. This was good for cocaine babies, too, and also for cocaine mothers, you know, if they have to do that drug. It helps them give birth to a normal child. Yeah.
What's the stopping
ground now?
Silver one,
yeah. The gold-plated one, is a tranquilizer, because it always stimulates the chakras in the body that are related to gold. And the silver one relates chakras to silver, because each chakra, each energy gland, has different doors on it, vibrations. So different metals in the pyramid turn on different valves and turn on different switches in the body. Okay. Another example, an extreme example of a consciousness change in an individual. In 1979, we were at Portland Hilton in Portland, Oregon, and we were doing a National Health Federation show. This is 1979. We had just invented the radome. We used to sell the pyridome, radome, and firedome. We didn't have any powerdome in those days. For $29.95? I don't know. We used to sell all three of them for $40, $39.95. That's when gold was $125 an ounce, $500 now. This little, very attractive housewife keeps hovering. I had a business suit on, short hair, and so I looked like a Mr. Straight with a pyramid on, you know. This housewife keeps hovering over the booth, you know. And at that time, I was married to Alana's mother, the girl that was at the house last night. Her mother was there. And she had the pyramid on. And everybody in the whole goddamn hotel had it on. The National Health Federation had them on, because they all were into it. And this woman keeps hovering, you know. And I said to her, "Lady, what's your problem? You need a pyramid." I thought, "You really need a pyramid bad." I just said, "Oh." She was like, "Oh." You know, and she was kind of let's say upper middle class kind of dress, kind of a straight woman, in other words, and it's a little bit of jewelry on. So she comes over there, kind of fiddles around with them, and picks up all three of them. I said, "You need all three of these. You take them home immediately and start wearing them." I told her, anybody in my life needs a pyramid, it was her, you know. And she went for it. And she took them home, started wearing them. Her name was Jay-Z Knight. Okay? So just give you an idea of what they can do. It took her 3 months. So there's things like that happen. I could go on and give a whole other seminar on things like Jay-Z Knights of this world that have been enlightened by the pyramids and systems, but I'm not here for that. You'll find out for yourself if you're interested. I don't have to tell you. It'll surface somewhere, you know. Yeah, I will. Well, first, you got to get to that point. The next point we're going to be now, the fourth gateway, is what my best of ignorance about. And then those left, everybody buy them all. Better that. Okay. This is the next step.
Scalar waves.
Very interesting. Okay. I'm assuming most people know what chakra is right now. I'm assuming you remember everything from yesterday. Because if you don't remember everything from yesterday, you're going to be completely lost at this point on. Okay. So if you have any questions about yesterday, you better ask them now, or you're going to get lost. Okay. So I'm assuming you know this stuff. Okay, we're looking at the energy. And we realize that we're on Earth, and we're moving 1,000 miles an hour right now. We've got energy emanations coming from Sirius. We've got Pleiades, Orion, hitting, crossing swords with the force of the Earth. That compute to you, right? So, effectively, everywhere, everything on this Earth is being struck by energy because of the rotation of the Earth, okay? And that includes us. So we are getting struck by external energies, okay? And I'm talking external forces, not internal forces. We are being struck by external forces. This external reaction on our physical bodies is what animates while we're here. I've explained to you how the blood makes your fingerprints. I've explained to you how the iron, the nerves, the aura field, how it connects to the different planes. You know all that now. If not, you can review it later. Sannyasi got very specific with me, and we got into systems technology. And you got to realize that I had no idea I was going to do this. In 1972, if you told me I was going to be in the pyramid business, I'd say, you're crazy. I'm not even interested in it, you know. I'm a retired aerospace engineer studying there in Tibetan, taking acid, and all I want to do is space out to get the material world, you know, where I was at. But anyhow, when she started to bring me back around the corner, she describes, on page 133 here, we begin to describe the physical characteristics of the chakras, and basically it's describing the wavelengths of the energy that are created by our bodies physically impacting the natural forces of the universe, and it's creating a weaving, like a weaver's pattern. Like here's the chakra system, it turns, and it breaks these forces and it creates these vortexes. And what she is describing here is reality, basically, in a few short words, a paragraph or two. So what we're going to describe here is exactly what happens at the moment that one energy of force inside your body collides with one energy of force from the outside universe. Okay? This is all happening within a billionth of a second, all of what I'm about to read. Okay? The example I gave is the root, the base of the spine chakra. At the impact, the energy is directed in the four directions simultaneously. So we have, in the body, we have seven different endocrine glands. Each endocrine gland has a different frequency. It's tuned to a different octave, okay, one of seven musical notes. Each octave, each frequency, is a finer frequency than the previous one. The coarsest frequency, the lowest notes, the base of the spine, the highest one is the crown chakra. It's got 960 spokes. We're talking about the low chakra now, the base of the spine, four spokes. At impact, the energy is directed into four directions. Now, this is the swastika being described. This is with the Atlantean symbol. Hitler described the swastika in a counterclockwise motion, which is destruction, which is what he was about. And the swastika of Atlantis was a clockwise direction swastika. You can see by the way the arms are, which way would be taking its rotation. At impact, the energy is directed in the four directions. By the way, Hitler did that on purpose. He knew the proper direction of the swastika. That was his control. He wanted to be God. And that was the way, and he had to destroy all creation in its natural way and dictate through the death his voice. I mean, this man was brilliant. I learned a lot from him. In impact, the energy is directed in the four directions. You know what was really funny? Is that not only did I personally know Hitler in the last lifetime very well, I knew his dog, I knew his wife, I knew his family, I also knew two or three generals. In this lifetime, and some other people around, in this lifetime, when I went back to work, I worked with the same general that I knew in the past life. He used to fly his plane around. He's now a film director. I worked with Wernher von Braun, who used to work with Hitler. He hated him. You know, Wernher von Braun at Peenemünde, where he lived, was his grandfather's hunting grounds. And that's where the caves of Peenemünde were, where they built all the B-2s. I knew Wernher intimately. And then another guy, I forget his name, now, three of them that I knew from the Third Reich. I went through two bodies and they went through one. Isn't that interesting? Anyway, at impact, the energy is directed in the four directions simultaneously, where it gradually dissipates into all cells at the region of the impact, causing cell reproduction. Boom. She has just described mitosis. Okay? So, page 134. There's pictures, drawings, everything. So we've just gotten this mitosis. Of course, pow, turn, you know, cause the cell to grow. So it was the force, it was the shock. It's like you get hurt in the fall, right? Not the falling, like he was saying. Well said. The force of it causes an expansion because cells, out of nowhere, create more cells. It's the force of the two forces coming together. It's the beauty, it's a gorgeous thing when you begin to understand it. So the force of the impact caused the cells to grow, and the shock of the impact, you know, like spank a baby when it takes its first breath and just lost 20-some base pairs per turn and 25% of its life is gone at its first breath. The force of the impact caused the cells to grow, and the shock of the impact caused the four spokes to rotate like a wheel. The force of the impact is called a strike. The area in which a strike occurs is called a struck zone. As the wheel rotates, it marries or balances the secondary. As the wheel rotates, it marries or balances the secondary or nervous energy in the body. This intermingling is much like the weaver's pattern. These chakras naturally divide into three groups: the lower, the middle, and the higher. Remember the same thing about the nervous system, the frequencies of the nervous system: autonomic, sympathetic, parasympathetic. The first three colors of the universe: will, love, and intellect. Father, Son, the Holy Ghost. It's all here. The first and second chakras, having but few spokes or petals, are principally concerned with receiving into the body the two forces which come in at a physical level. One being the serpent fire from the earth, and the other one the vitality of the sun. These centers of the middle group are engaged with forces which reach man through his personality. Boom. Two people with auras bumping. One sees the other sees the other. Imbalances creates karma and dharma simultaneously. It's all here. It's real simple. I know Roy's getting it. The centers of the middle group, okay, then it says all these centers feed certain ganglia in the body, which we talked about. Okay, now, I'm going to go on into this. I'm going to skip ahead. Every human on this planet is out of balance in one way or another. So as energy from a balanced universe such as ours strikes our bodies, entering through the bodies at chakra points, shown in the following drawings, at that exact moment, it encounters our imbalanced bodies, and it is put into a temporary...
Well, that concludes that part of the tape. Now what we'll do here is, I don't know if we did this other side of this one or not, so I'm going to check it here. I think we already did the other side. Yeah, that was the end of that one. So we've got a very little bit of time left here. So what I'll actually do is I'll let this roll over for 10 minutes. And you can hear the other side of the tape where we started out. And that'll be the end of the day for this guy. So anyhow, let's roll a little bit more.
What these gases do is they go up into the atmosphere, and what it causes is the storefront to move this way. And none of this water interferes, it doesn't rain to interfere with the solar evaporation process. So what they do is they go out there with a wooden hole, and they scrape off all this salt, and they pile it in piles like this. They put it here on these little islands, these are little inlets here. And the water flows in figure eight. What this... Actually, this should be over here like this. This should be extended out here. Because what it does is it goes like this. It weaves in and out like this in a figure eight.
Where can you get this from?
There's a company in California called Mega. I'm surprised that they haven't gone after this people. Because what they're doing is they're opening up a clinic down in Mexico. And what they're doing is you can go down there and get an intravenous feeding. You can cure any malady within, like a woman had cholera, she went to Renee Quinton, and he gave her an intravenous feeding of saline serum. See, saline serum is the life force in the body. It's called the water of life in the scripture.
So where can you get the salt? Through what company?
It's called the Salt Grain Society. They're in Magahalia, California. You spell that M-A-G-A-L-L-I-A. Yeah. Of course.
Sodium chloride and sodium, like when you get it to restaurants, you like the soy sauce. Is that the sodium you're talking about? No.
Okay.
That is not how you want it.
You know that when they brought the atomic bomb on Hiroshima, that all the people that had a lot of sodium chloride in the body reflected lots of radiation. Because the cubic foot, what it did is maintain cubic foot radiation. And remember, radiation cannot penetrate the cubic foot. Waves through, which is what radiation is through, which is the wave pressure field through, cannot penetrate the cubic. What they do is they reflect off of it. And so what the body does is instead of absorbing radiation, what it does is it reflects it off.
Right, and we're talking sodium chloride then is a salt, which is not regular.
You can include
any regular salt or soy sauce
or anything on the market. There's only one company in the world that imports it. They have the sole importing line. Because they go over there every year and talk to these salt farmers. The ancient Celts, the Celts, which came out of Ireland. All this knowledge came from Ireland.
What's the old homeopathic remedy for the Celts, too, aren't they?
Well, before the FDA got hold of it, see what they do is now they set up homeopathic according to UST standards. And UST standards is US Pharmacopoeia. And what US Pharmacopoeia does is they maintain 2% purity standards. What they say is that 98% of the trace metals are impurities, so we're going to remove them. Because in order to market it, put it out of the market, you've got to have purity. So what they're doing is they're selling it to the public on the guise of they're purifying it. It doesn't have to be as much as our new year for others. You know what they're doing with this 92% of the trace minerals? They're selling these trace minerals to the industry and making money off of it. 92% of the salt industry is based on sale of trace minerals. And I'll tell you, two of the most important trace minerals. This mineral right here is the philosopher's stone that these master alchemists. Paracelsus knew this. Paracelsus could do biological transmutation. He could train through lead to gold, mercury to gold by using sodium chloride. He knew this, but he never told anybody this. It was never revealed to the public because this is a secret among the doctors. Doctors will not tell a person this. This is the most important element in nature right here, magnesium chloride. And the only salt that has that in it is salt and sea salt. That's the ACCP pump, the enocyanate triphosphate pump. The pumps calcium out of the. You know what calcium does when bonding breaks down? Calcium has a matrix, just like hydrogen carbon. The calcium bonding breaks down, the calcium goes into dissolution, and it calcifies, goes into the tissues, and the soft tissues and hard tissues of the body and it calcifies. It causes bone spurs on the bone and it causes calcification. This is what hardening of the arteries is. Due to dehydration. Because there's not enough water to maintain the matrix of the calcium bond. The calcium has bonding just like hydrogen does. Hydrogen is bonded in the body. And when it's bonded, it's cubical. When it's cubical, it's dodecahedron. Just like this. This is what dodecahedron looks like. And that's exactly what the Earth's grid field looks like. And you're connected to the Earth's grid field. So when you become dehydrated, the Earth becomes dehydrated. When you become unbalanced, because all the electrical poles are connected. And what happens is there's a racism and a gravitational shift of the wave, contraction-wise and expansion-wise, because of unbalance. Nature always, this is why when you become unbalanced, you affect every piece of matter in the universe. Every
and expansion-wise, because of unbalance. Nature always, this is why when you become unbalanced, you affect every piece of matter in the universe. Every piece of matter in the universe shifts to compensate for your unbalance. And the reason we have low electrical potential down here is because of negative thinking. The thought ranks are ellipsoid instead of if everybody would get together and think spherical, the Earth would stand upright. The 23.5 degree angle would become upright like this. It would be on center with the sun's equator, and their consciousness level would go like this, and these aliens would evaporate. They would crawl back into the woodwork from which they came. So every time you raise your consciousness, you're raising the consciousness of energy to keep it from matter in the universe. When you raise your electrical potential in the body, you're raising the electrical potential of every piece of physical matter in the universe. And everybody asks me, well, what can I do? I'm just one person. I said, raise your electrical potential. Because the brain is electrical. Thinking is an electrical process. That's why electricity doesn't exist. When you stop thinking, if universal mind ever stopped thinking, all physical matter in the universe would evaporate. But see, people become, it's not what you eat, it's what you drink. I can show you people that are 100 years old. If you take water, and if you have sufficient water, volume, and sodium in the body, you can eat anything you want. Because what water does is it breaks up toxins. People go on fast. I got two people that I treated. They went on a fast, and what they did is all these poisons and toxins collected in the system because they were dehydrated. What you do when you go on a fast is you dehydrate yourself if you don't drink water.
Tell me what happens when I smoke tobacco and drink coffee. Explain that to a little bit. All the poison
goes in the body. Well, caffeine is what caffeine does is it acts as a diuretic. And as soon as you start, the first thing people tell me is when I tell them they're dehydrated, is the first thing they tell me is, oh no, I'm not dehydrated. You're wrong. I'm not dehydrated. And I said, okay, what do you drink every day? Well, I have 6 cups of coffee in the morning, and I drink two bottles of 8 ounce. Bottles of soda pop and of Coca-Cola in the afternoon, and then I top that off with 4 or 5 cans of beer. And what they're doing is what alcohol does in the body is it acts as a diuretic. It's just like take Lysak. Lysak is a $300 a bottle, and what it does is it's a diuretic. And these doctors are charging $300. I said, why don't you just open up your veins and get rid of yourself? I said, if you want to commit suicide, I said, do it knowingly. Don't do it because you lack knowledge. If you want to kill yourself, just do it. Go out there and jump off a cliff with a rope around your neck. It's not the fall that kills you, it's the sudden stop. People are committing suicide. What you're doing, every death is a suicide. Read Sonia, she's absolutely right. It's a book called Loving Relationships, Sandra Locke. She wrote a book, and she went out with 6 highway patrolmen from California, out here in California, in Sacramento, went out with them, she says, in 6 months, all these officers are going to be dead. What you do is you program yourself for death. All deaths are suicide. What people do is they go out unconsciously, and that's unconsciously. You got to study Russell. Russell takes all the bull BS out of all this stuff. There's no such thing as an unconscious person. I can knock you out and you're still fully conscious.
There's no such thing as being unconscious. You're always, consciousness is always conscious. It never changes its consciousness. What it does is it fades in the background and becomes inoperative because it doesn't have a vehicle to function in. The consciousness is very subtle. It needs a vehicle to function in this plane. Now, the first root rays had helium bodies, and consciousness didn't have to have form to function. And carbon started at the second root rays, which is the Hyperboreans. Then you had your Lemurians and Atlanteans came in, were 20 feet tall. That's why I was one of the original Atlanteans from Syria. They came from Syria, and they built the pyramids. They used sound to build the pyramids. So you could do anything. And the science of the future, the medicine of the future is going to be based on science. I have a tape that you guys ought to sit down and listen to. And what it does is, you've never asked me to see it. It's the most powerful tape you've ever heard. Your pineal gland will vibrate, it will almost leave your head, I guarantee you. She was upstairs. This lady lives upstairs. She came down here and she said, my pineal gland is about ready to leave my head.
That's the most stagnant organ in the body, almost.
Oh, yeah. That's what the third eye. Did you know that? Do you know what the pineal gland is? It's a circadian indigenous oscillator. You know what that means? That's what creates the illusion of time. What it's doing is measuring wave reflection. You know why it does? Because it's the matrix of the central nervous system. The matrix of the central nervous system.
Synchronizes the pineal gland with time perfectly. So you wear it on your head, it puts you in perfect synchronicity with time. Well, I've had people get a headache when they're in pyramid because it's detoxing the brain and the liver simultaneously. And it creates a rhythm. You know, when people go into absolute perfect rhythm, their body starts shedding off so many toxins in the brain from the pyramid. You know. Yeah. We get a study of over 1,000 people wearing a pyramid, 1,000 of them, they all had the same results, smoking and doing drugs and alcohol. They start detoxing them. And when they finish the process, it takes about 2 years. We produce all the cells after wearing a pyramid every single day. Their mind was clearer than it was when they were children.
See, what they're doing is you know, the pyramid is a transmitter and a receiver. It's a corner, in radar, it's called a corner receiver. And the inside, the 300 planes of the cube look like this. That's a two-dimensional drawing of the three inner planes. What these do is, what the outside corner of the cube is this corner here in reverse. If you take this corner like this and lay it over like this, it looks like this. That's why they multiply. That's what a 33rd degree master mason is. A 33rd degree mason is a person that understands the nine octaves of physical matter. That's why they call them 33rd degree magnets. Because how do you form nine octaves? By multiplying, by multiplication. And how does nature do that? It does it on an octave keyboard, if you want to use music. And what it does in the carbon octave, which is the fourth octave, what you do is you start out with lithium. And I'll draw this out like on a wave, what it looks like on a wave. It goes like this. And what you have is you have lithium here. That's the first potential. Then you have beryllium.
So the way the spaceships work in the grave, by the way, you know, the same reaction you're going to do.
That's boron, and here's carbon up here on the wave amplitude. Now on this side of the wave, this is plus one here. This is plus two. These aliens know all this. This is why it's imperative that you understand this.
And they use it against people.
Yeah.
They use their propulsion system into the Earth's field in a reverse way. The Pleiadians don't do that, but they bring it to us. It becomes very destructive.
They do what now?
The principles, if you look at the principles, the way their ships work, the way they create the beryllium reaction from lithium, breaking it down, that energy of a great ship creates a negative wave on the planet, on the Earth.
Oh, yeah.
And this then releases what's called astral vampirism, wherein when these ships exhibit this characteristic within the Earth creates astral vampirism, releasing negative energies from the fourth dimension into this dimension. And this is where the negativity is coming from. And it's become aberration. And it's becoming more and more visible now because the arbitrary rate of consciousness is changing all the time. It's increasing. So the negative energy is also increasing along with it. It's becoming visible because of the action of the grace, allowing it to come into the fourth dimension. Normally, these are trapped. And during the full moon cycle, the first 2 weeks of the full moon, are when these energies are released. During the new moon cycle, a natural process in the earth starts to draw it back. And the Pleiadian technology takes into system, takes into consideration the cycle and works in the limitations of the cycle. That's what that Omnium is all about right there. If you look at the Omnium, it's playing the little pyramid. You're forced, your visual action is forced to be drawn into that. It draws in negativity. Then it draws in negativity, and that crystal starts vibrating at a high rate of speed, and it changes the process of the negative consciousness into a high electromagnetic field that relates to all the minerals in the body, that's what the Omnium.
Well, we're running out of time on that one, so going to have to stop it, and we'll have some new stuff for you next week, anyhow.